Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of June 7th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm good. Good to have you along. So, D.R., there's been all kinds of news this week, outrageous news of what would appear to be something that challenges the very moral fiber of our country. And I think it's relevant to a discussion on a podcast about climate. And the topic I'm referring to is the Trump administration's latest effort to intimidate immigrants, especially people coming seeking asylum in this country, and that intimidation being accomplished through separating families and taking away young children from their parents at the border as a matter of policy, and with ongoing reportage about children being held in cages in blacked out Walmarts on the Texas border and they having too many kids to deal with. First of all, let me just say, you can probably agree, but you can have your statement as well. But the whole idea of separating families at the border is morally reprehensible. It is beyond what, in fact, I saw somewhere where the United Nations is calling on the United States to change the policy as being inhumane and a crime against humanity. I think it's. I mean, did you see anything about that? I mean, what was your reaction to the
when
the
I saw
news?
The coverage? When I saw the coverage, the first thing that popped into my head was that wasn't it 25 years ago these guys who support this policy weren't they running around calling themselves family values people? This is valuing families, isn't it? I mean, to be so extreme in terms of the application of the policy that I was watching. I think there's a Rachel Maddow segment where Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon went to visit one of these detention facilities in Texas, and the people running the detention facility apparently tried to call the cops on a United States senator.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, come on. It's remarkably brazen, and it is, at least from what news reports, I'm sure the news reports are all over the place. Most people listening to this have probably seen that, but Sessions basically saying this was a deterrent, right? Saying if you don't want your child taken away, don't come to the border. I mean, it is intimidation. It is threatening people who are seeking asylum based on bad circumstances in their home country. I mean, it's just, it's, to my mind, deeply, deeply un-American. And it's not clear to me that enough people are. I mean, I admire Jeff Merkley for going. I mean, but more. I mean, there is an ICE. I saw some tweets that there is an ICE ICE building up in Burlington somewhere. Right here in Massachusetts, right? I mean, who's inside that one?
It's a. And as you point out, that it's un-American, although. Sadly, from a certain perspective, it's uniquely American in the sense that you think back to all the stories about families brought over, you know, during slavery split apart with children and adults being sold to different slave owners.
Absolutely. No, I mean, you're right. You're quite right. It is it is a horrific history of this, and it is it's not good. But I guess the question, the reason that it is worth consideration on this show, right, where we purport to talk about climate issues, is that, at least in my mind, there is a climate connection because the United States, our country's policy on immigration, particularly on immigration, less on emigration, I suppose, but certainly in terms of people coming to this country, it has to be impacted by climate change. Right? The idea that somehow going forward, and quite conceivably in the present, but the idea that over the next 50 years there are not going to be profoundly painful questions about people being forced out of their homes and looking for a place to be because of climate change is an important one. And I think that we need to talk about a modified immigration policy in the face of the fact that we know these flows of refugees will only increase. I mean, is that a reasonable place to start?
Definitely, definitely. When you think about, you know, about so many people being displaced from other countries as a result of United States' emissions, mm-hmm. and basically, mm-hmm. you know, the idea that people who are trying to flee drowning could come here and have their families split in two by the same ideological forces that also support the pollution that caused their plight to begin with. It's profoundly ghastly, and you definitely need to have a more enlightened policy in terms of dealing with these issues. But the problem is, of course, getting that more enlightened policy requires voting.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think that so I saw something that said even on the Mexican border with the United States, climatic conditions in Mexico will contribute. Of course, mm-hmm. if you look at this stuff and reading about immigration and climate, very few people say that climate will be the direct and only motivating factor for people to move. Right, unless mm-hmm. unless you're a refugee from a terrible storm, sort of the fact that your ancestral home place is now drought ridden and there's no water, that's just one of a number of facts about where you're going to go and what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. But still, in all, climate is contributing to motion of people, migration of people in Mexico into the United States, even now at a secondary mm-hmm. level. But I guess the point I would want to make is that even beyond the utter awfulness of Trump, and let's just say Trump gets frog marched out of the White House and put in Leavenworth prison for the next 50 years. Okay, by the end of 2019, he's gone. All right,
and maybe he's already got the orange.
He's already got the orange. Let's just say he's gone, and Mike Pence gets vote impeached, and Nancy Pelosi's the head of the Congress, and she gets to be president. All right, let's say good mm-hmm. circumstances. Still, in all, over the next 50 years, it is going to take a lot of effort to craft a policy that is both humane and wise and fair that takes into account climate in immigration policies. And mm-hmm. I think that it's a continuing, I mean, we must vote and get rid of Trump. I completely agree. But I guess this is an example for me of the need for issues around climate to move to the center and be the motivating engine for a lot of our national policy. So if you mm-hmm. think climate change is happening, right? Climate change is happening. Well, that's going to impact immigration policy. It's going to mm-hmm. impact health policy. It's mm-hmm. going to impact defense policy. It's going to mm-hmm. impact many, many areas of our country, right? The economy. I mean, how we grow the economy, it affects jobs. It affects tariffs. It affects trades. I mean, all of those. I think climate hawks need to put forward a thesis that says the impact of climate change is real and will motivate policies across the board in many places other than saying, oh, yeah, clean energy. So I completely mm-hmm. agree. We need clean energy. We need 100% clean energy, right? But beyond that, all of the other policies need to change, because we talk about climate change as being sort of the system-level thing that will affect all aspects of our lives. Then all aspects of our policies will probably have to react. Mm-hmm. Is that anywhere around?
I think of the impact on housing policy. I mean, you can't keep turning all these places into Airbnbs when you have to house, you know, so many people who are fleeing, you know, the destruction of their homelands.
We talked a couple of weeks ago, an interesting point, but California is already mandating solar panels on roofs, right? And that's connected to climate change issues, and that's a housing issue, right? Mm-hmm. And the question of whether or not the greenhouse gas reductions, the energy efficiencies we need are improved by having denser urban centers that are well served by mass transit as opposed to building more and more highways, right? That's another policy that is impacted by climate change. And I guess, I think that this is something where climate hawks need to spread their wings a little bit and start talking about other policies, because the example I've always made is that during the middle of the 20th century, fighting communism was the central motivating principle of the federal government, Right? Mm-hmm. Everything they did was around fighting communism. Right? Mm-hmm. All kinds of stuff was done in the name of national defense. Well, in the same way, stopping climate change or mitigating the impact of climate change has to be the central organizing principle of our politics and affect everything. And so, I mean, mm-hmm. I just think that's so. I mean, that all kind of rewinds to immigration, right? It just as a clear example in the present of this ghastly thing that Trump is doing, but we see there's a need for a much wiser policy with the rest of the world. Huh?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There has to be a national and international focus to our politics and.
That
didn't happen in 2016. We'll see what happens the next time around.
Well, I mean, there's two offshoots from that. One is that we could touch on is that this is the first anniversary of President Spanky Pants pulling out of the Paris Accord, and we can come back to that. But I mean, the other idea that I have in my head is the following thing, and it has to do with climate, or let's say sustainability as an organizing principle of our government, our policy, and our lives. I have noticed recently that there are more and more cities and towns that are rejecting plastic bags, mm-hmm. right? And I think there are more and more effort to reject straws, plastic straws. I just, mm-hmm. I don't know, have you seen any, you know, uptick in that, or is that just me picking up on things I want to see?
Yeah, there's definitely more of a push to have restaurants and stores, eliminate plastic bags and eliminate straws, because when you just see the stories about how much of this plastic ends up in the ocean and right. ends up killing a fish and killing life in the sea, you can totally understand why there needs to be a push to sort of eliminate it once and for all.
But I guess the point I'm making is that the single use plastic, like the straws or the coffee stirrers and whatnot, that seems to me to have traction. I can't, that just is just this gut feeling that I have in talking to people. That has traction in a way that climate change doesn't. But it also, I've had people come up to me and just start talking about the bags in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, all the plastic in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. I mean, people resonate with that, but from my perspective, it is a shift in perspective of how humans relate to the planet. And if that is... if that perspective is achieved through the plastic bags, that's great, because I think the next step is to talk about, climate change is putting all kinds of bad stuff in the air. And that it reflects the kind of societal shift of the way people think about themselves that's required. And that kind of ties in with the whole idea that the government needs to be centered around a different organizing principle. I mean, maybe that's too ambiguous. I don't know.
I think what's going on is that people can relate to things that are tangible, things they can see, things that they can touch. So it reminds me a lot of, what went on in the late 80s and early 90s when there was that revolt against McDonald's using, styrofoam for their McDLTs and their Big Macs and their quarter pounders, and how there was a push to finally get McDonald's to switch to a more sustainable model. And it was because people finally made the connection between things they touched, things they ate, and what was going on in the broader environment. And that's what's going on here once again. So it's like, so it goes to, and I think Gina McCarthy was talking about this in her introductory speech for the Sea Change program at Harvard. How do you make this relatable? How do you bring it down to a grassroots level? And that's the hardest nut to crack, so to speak.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you're quite right, that's a good point, is that you see the plastic bag dangling in the tree, but you don't see the carbon dioxide, right? What we need to do is paint all the carbon dioxide molecules brown, and then all of a sudden people would begin to, wow, interesting point. Well, anyway, I mean, those are, I guess the other thing that I wanted to touch on before we end is that this coming weekend, is the mayor's conference in the city of Boston. So the U.S. mayoral conference of big cities across the country will be here. In fact, on Thursday the 7th, today, right, there will be the meeting sponsored by Mayor Walsh of Boston at BU, I think it is, of mayors who have arrived early to talk about the consequences of climate change for cities and what cities can do, right? That's tomorrow, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And do you, I mean, who's do you remind me, who's going to speak at that? Do you know?
At the BU event, it's going to be Gina McCarthy, the last actual EPA head, and former Secretary of State John Kerry. You can make an argument that Kerry was our last actual Secretary of State too.
Yes. Well, I guess the reason that cities are important is because there's a lot of people in cities. They are effective ways to take action because they have the municipal power over lots of people to set transit policies, housing policies. And so given the age of walking out of the Paris Accord, the cities are places that can make progress, not the least of which is because the density of people allows you to make living easier and greener. Strangely enough, right? Cities are an opportunity to have an efficient lifestyle because you get mass transit, you get all kinds of stuff that allows you to be, in a sense, greener than if you're out in the country. So that's why the mayors are important, and that's why this conference happening on Thursday, the 7th of June, is important, despite the fact that Mayor Walsh has his own. I guess his own climate hypocrisy going on, which will be called out. He is slow walking the implementation of community choice energy or aggregated energy purchasing by the city of Boston, which has been mandated by the city council. The mayor's office has not gone as quickly as they can with that. And the mayor is allowing this, what are they calling, the billionaire pipeline or something? The Back Bay billionaire.
Yeah, the One Dalton pipeline.
Yeah, to run natural gas into this large luxury apartment building that's being built. And there will be as part of that, and to make the call on mayors generally to do the right thing when it comes to climate change, there will be an event in Copley Plaza, which is, I guess, these guys are going to be meeting in the Fairmont Hotel or something. Isn't the Fairmont?
I think so.
That's the Fairmont there, right? It's not the Park Plaza. Okay. Anyway, the hotel is right on Copley Place, is where the mayors are going to be. In Copley Plaza, right out there in front of the Boston Public Library, there will be a protest at 9:30 to 11:30 calling on the mayors to do the right thing. So if you can get to that, it'll be it's a good thing, Friday morning. So there you go, DR. We've got big discussion about how to make climate the centerpiece of our politics. An example number one being, how do we get a better immigration policy that'll stand the test of 50 years of time? And we see that this move to ban plastics maybe is a harbinger of a shift in the way people think. We can only hope.
Indeed.
Right?
Indeed.
All right, so we'll put up some links to some of the stuff, although we're a little bit theoretical today. You can find the blog, those links as they are, and the podcast itself on the MCAN blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find that link on our Facebook page at /massclimateaction. And, of course, you can listen to this podcast directly through your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, et cetera, all those various podcast directories. So, DR, we're going to close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the Trump administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.